This is the CWG Stewardship Working Session in the Padang Ballroom on February 11th, 2015, from 1715 to 1915.
Hi, everyone. Just to let you know, we'll be starting very shortly. We'll be starting the meeting very shortly. Right. Afternoon, everyone. We're going to begin the meeting now. Just to check, I think we're live. We've got a recording. We've got Scribe, so we're ready to go. Thanks, everyone. Welcome to this afternoon's meeting. This is a working group meeting, a public working group meeting of the cross-community working group on the IANA stewardship transition. We have an agenda before you. You'll see it in front of you up on the screen. There's 9 items, and we include at the end an item towards the end under item 7, an open microphone session, recognizing that we are in a meeting in a public way, and we would like to create the opportunity for input other than for members and participants. So welcome to all of you, including our members and participants in the working group, as well as those of you who are here as observers in as part of your interest in the work of the group and being at this meeting. Also welcome to our colleagues, the Cross-Community Working Group on Accountability co-chairs, who are here with us and will participate in particular in section 4 of the agenda. And to remind you, the way in which this group works is that members and participants contribute to the discussion on an equal footing and are welcome to contribute at any time. I would like to ask you all, to the extent that you have the equipment, to enter the Adobe Connect room so we can manage the queue through the Adobe Connect room and communicate with one another as if we were in a remote location, and also to accommodate any remote participants, because not everyone who is a member or participant is here. We certainly haven't funded specifically travel for members of the working group to participate as though this were a face-to-face meeting, so we should not presume that it is. We will, as I said, hold an open microphone for observers to contribute, and we will try and give that a decent amount of time so there is opportunity for contributions in that way. When you do speak into the microphone, if you could please give your name and confirm that you are a member or participant. It's not to distinguish between members and participants, but to assure that you are a member or participant. I should probably have welcomed first my co-chair, Lisa Furr. I've gone straight into the microphone and neglected to welcome Lisa. We are so used to working together that we are a partnership in this. So we talked yesterday and met in preparation for the meeting. And so under item 1, I'd like to make a couple of opening remarks that Lisa and I have discussed. And I think probably the very first point to make is that to date, and that's since approximately October last year, this group has taken its job very seriously and worked extremely hard. We've had a very high intensity of work through days, nights, weekends, and holidays. I know some of you have worked through the traditional North American, or at least the US Thanksgiving holiday. Many of you worked over the Christmas holidays. And I think the group has been pretty relentless in its pursuit of trying to produce some output. And we've grappled with some complicated and challenging issues. We've come to Singapore on the back of a draft proposal in December. Public comments on that draft proposal, which have been obviously shared on lists and in the information sessions here in Singapore. And as you know, and I won't go into the detail because we've had information sessions on this here at the meeting, produced a discussion document which highlighted some key questions and issues that we've been grappling with. The discussion document has appropriately and as intended stimulated a lot of discussion, some additional questions that weren't posed in the document, and lots of interest. And, of course, the group and we as co-chairs and coordinators asked for feedback, and we've got it in spades. So that's great. That's very welcome, and that was what was intended. I should note that it's also been very helpful to have the members of staff that are present from the IANA function here. It's been great to be able to talk to them and to hear them and to have them engage with the community. I think that's been helpful to me, and I know it's been helpful to others to refresh or learn from scratch elements and details over the function that they perform. And indeed, as acknowledged by this group and others, perform well and effectively to date. So where do we go from here? We've got a dedicated session tomorrow to deal with Q&A, and we expect to pick up feedback from the discussion document and deal with that in some detail. Lisa and I and what we call the RFP group coordinators have discussed the feedback we've heard and felt and seen from sessions and corridor discussions and our own analysis. And I think it's certainly mine and Lisa's view that we need to refresh and refocus our approach on the back of that. I've got three key points I wanted to highlight in terms of where we go from here. And really, I think that they are as follows. We certainly feel the need to continue to move ahead and make good progress, and in fact to be seen to be making progress as well. I think one of the issues is we've been doing a lot of work in the group, but perceptions are not necessarily that don't necessarily match that. So I think it's very important that we produce outputs as well as do the work in the group that are seen and read to be evidence of incremental progress. It's clear from the plans we've seen already submitted to the ICG and from our own knowledge and understanding of the situation that a functional, implementable, and complete plan is required, and the sense of emergence of such a plan is also needed. So I think one key thing we can do as we continue our work is to make sure we focus on the functional requirements of any component of such a plan before any further work on that piece of the jigsaw will be very helpful, because it will give us an opportunity to cross-reference against that functional requirement and make sure we test that the work we are doing matches that requirement. So I'll come back to these issues in the agenda a little later when we talk about the way forward under item 5, but I think that's probably enough for now under the opening remarks, and I think we can move on into other areas of the agenda. I'll pause for a moment in case there are questions or comments on those opening remarks, so let me just pause for a moment before we go on to item 2. Any comments or questions from members and participants of CWG? All right. Bear in mind, as I said, that if you do want to make any point, make yourself known in the Adobe Connect room. And if for whatever reason you don't have access to that, then make yourself known physically by raising your hand in the room here. So clearly, security and stability under item 2 is fundamental to everything we do. It's at the heart of ICANN's mission and explicit in the stewardship transition. The ESAC, Security and Stability Advisory Committee, is a chartering organization of this working group and has produced relevant material recently. So we felt that it would be very useful to hear from the ESAC on the relevant material, and in particular on the recently produced SAC 69 document. So it's a pleasure to have someone here from ESAC to magically appear, as they do. Welcome, and over to you.
Thank you very much. I'm Patrick Feldstrom. I'm chair of the Security and Stability Advisory Committee. And to my right, I have Russ Mundy, which is the other person from ESAC that is appointed being member of the ICG. I also happen to be co-chair of the ICG, but I'm here in my role as chair of ESSAC. What we wanted to do is to give a brief overview, next slide please, over the content of our document number 69. That document gives ESSAC view on a couple of issues related to the IANA stewardship transition. It complements our documents number 67 and 68, where document 67 gives an overview and history of the IANA functions, which is to go through what the IANA function operator actually is doing, have been doing, and why they're doing it. And SAC 68, which goes through the contract between the Department of Commerce and ICANN regarding IANA operation, because there is a difference between the two. So when talking about what IANA function is, so it's important to know whether you talk about the IANA function at ICANN or the contract and vice versa. Both of those had the intention to be objective documents that describe this in a correct way. SAC 69, on the other hand, gives the ESSAC view over what should be done. The reader, as with all ESSAC documents, can choose themselves whether they agree or not, whether they will act or not on our recommendations, but let me here present the recommendations. This document describes the way in which NTIA currently contributes to the security, stability, and resiliency of the IANA function activities. So we have identified what NTIA actually is doing. It presents questions and issues that ESSAC believe must be addressed by the internet community in order to preserve the security, stability, and resilience of the IANA function activities through and beyond the transition. It also makes recommendations to each of the questions and issues raised. Next slide, please. We believe that any proposal to replace NTIA's final authorization of root zone changes with an alternative must be at least as reliable, resilient, and efficient as the current process. We do believe further that effective arrangements should be made for the reliable and timely performance of all aspects of the root zone management process post-transition, including inter-organization coordination, if the post-transition root zone management process involves more than one root zone management partner. We further believe that NTIA should clarify the processes and legal framework associated with the role of the root zone maintainer after the transition. Next slide, please. Further, whether or not the requirements and deliverables defined in the IANA functions contract should be retained, and if additional external controls are necessary or less, how and by whom they should be administered. It should also determine whether or not existing mechanisms outside of the IANA functions contract are sufficiently robust to hold the IANA functions operator accountable to the affected communities for the proper performance of the IANA function after the IANA functions contract expires. And if they are not, the community should determine what additional accountability mechanism will be needed. Next slide, please. Further, investigate and clarify the process for handling the possibility of governmental sanctions and restrictions, i.e. the protocol for obtaining OFAC licenses where US sanctions might interfere with the ability to execute proper instructions for IANA following the stewardship transition. Consider the extent to which the importance of transparency and freedom from improper influence in the performance of the IANA functions might require additional mechanisms or safeguards. And finally, review and, if necessary, enhance its policy development processes to ensure that all of the instructions that it provides to the IANA functions operator are clear and implementable. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Patrick and Russ. Any comments or questions for our colleagues from ESSAC? Patrick, go ahead.
Yes, I would like to also, ESAC, we would like to thank you for the ability to present this. My apologies that I have to go to another meeting, but Russ will be here for the whole meeting if further questions come up during the discussion. As this is a working session, we also found it being important to be here.
So it strikes me that there's one point that I would think. My impression looking at this is that you are a chartering organization of the CWG, and therefore will be, like all of the chartering organizations, in a position to approve or not object to the proposal, or clearly you could object, but we hope that you will either approve or not object to the proposal when we've refined it to a satisfactory state. And it strikes me that what in effect you have produced here is a form of high-level checklist as a basis. So it is something which we'll need to, as a basis for your potential sign-off, and so it is something we'll need to be cognizant of to that extent is very helpful guidance.
And I would also commend the group that's working, focused on this, to also look at SAC 67 and SAC 68 to read the content of what's there, because I think it will make the recommendations and content of 69 more meaningful if you also study those documents. And I would agree with your general assessment, Jonathan, that in fact 69 will be an important aspect in what ESAC says about the results.
Let me explain the process issue, because it has to do a little bit, or quite a lot, with how our internal processes work at ESAC. We have two members of the CWG, Jaap Akkerhaus and Robert. And so it's not the two of us here, which actually are the members of the CWG. The way for us in ESAC to produce a common view in ESAC about certain issues is by writing documents like this. So these documents we are passing to the CWG via our members. Whether those Robert and Jaap then participate in the group on equal footing, just like all the others, which means that it's perfectly all right to sort of negotiate and disagree and whatever you want to do with these documents. So these are forwarded as the ESAC position, and when the document later is ready for us to approve it, then yes, we will compare with this document. But if it is the case, the conclusion is CWG is not matching our recommendation, that does not by no means mean that we will not approve the document, just to make that clear.
And that's a very important and helpful subtlety, so thank you for pointing that out. We can take this as a guide, we can negotiate back against that guide, and we shouldn't take it as the final word, but that's very helpful to, you know, see that daylight between the point that I made originally and that. Thank you. Okay, I have a hand up from Greg Chatan. Greg, go ahead.
Thank you, Greg Shatton, for the record. I think we, at a very in the very near future, we need to work very carefully through this document, consider it a form of dialogue, that we really need to kind of go down it chapter and verse. Obviously, we'll return to it from time to time afterwards, but I think we really need to discuss, as it stands now, what we're doing in relation to each of the points in the document. This is not, it's not on our agenda for today, but that really we really need to have a SAC 69 day, in a sense, where we really get intimate with the document. Hopefully, not too intimate, but we really need to feel that we've integrated it into our thinking and processes. And if there are issues, as Patrick says, where we come to different conclusions, we need to test those out iteratively with the ESAC and not just see if they agree with our disagreement when we deliver the final product. I know we won't, and our ESAC colleagues who are our members and participants wouldn't let us, but I feel it's worth saying nonetheless. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. I agree with you, and I think it's something we'll pick up as the first action coming out of this meeting. Patrick?
Hello, there is better. So before it's sometimes it's nicer. This is Patrik Fältström standing on this microphone instead of being in the front of the stage. Luckily enough, I haven't seen anyone running for the hills. Let me calm down people even more to say that one of the things most people that have read, specifically SAC 68, that goes through what ESSAC believe is covered by the contract of the IANA functions, and also what we have discovered in SAC 69 that NTIA really participate in regarding operations, it is much, much, much shorter lists than what people thought. So by reading the document, it's not to create work. You will see that it will make your work easier because we actually talk about fewer things than what most people think. And that's how we help it. That's how we hope these documents will help the community.
Thank you.
Jonathan Robinson. Merci, Patrick. Je crois que de toute évidence, c'est le...
But I think, and this will become clear as we talk about working methods, I think we will also ask a smaller group, a task force, if you like, to review those documents in detail and pull out actions for the group or key reference points for the group. Okay, I think that gives us the opportunity to move on to item 3 in the agenda, which is an update on the work of the client committee on seeking on developing the proposal for and seeking legal advice on the key areas of the model which require legal advice. You'll see from the agenda that Greg Shutton of the client committee will, and just for those of you who don't recall or perhaps aren't familiar, the client committee, we have a client committee comprised the co-chairs, myself and Lisa, Greg and Martin.
Thank you, Jonathan. I figured I would address you face to face rather than face to back. So let me tell you briefly about the current status of the client committee and our efforts. We have identified about a half a dozen different law firms that we believe have all of the requisite skills and abilities that are necessary to advise us on the matters in front of us. We believe that the core competency that we're looking for is in the corporate governance area, which is an area that we've identified some of the, I think, leading figures in that area who are in private practice, in many cases in large multinational firms who can draw on the experiences of their colleagues, not just in the U.S., but in a number of countries outside, and who are kind of sufficiently plugged into the corporate governance network that whatever opinions were... advice we need, they'll be able to orchestrate it for us. We're currently working through various processes with each of these firms so that their capabilities can be known to first the client committee, and then if they survive the client committee and don't and other issues aren't addressed, we would introduce that to the committee in general. We do, of course, want to go through a relatively rapid process in making this decision, since we won't get any legal advice until we've engaged legal counsel. It's premature at the moment to discuss any particular law firm because we're just not at that stage yet. But as that list crystallizes and perhaps some fall out and others seem to suggest themselves, we'll... obviously, you know, be transparent at the time when there's something to be, it can really be said. We are working with ICANN Legal, but we are also working independently of ICANN Legal as well, since it's, you know, critical that the advice be independent and that the retention is deemed independent and can be seen as independent by all of us. Fortunately, there are already well-prescribed ways to do that under legal ethics rules and you know, common practices. So it's not like we're going to have to invent any special process to make sure that we can be seen as getting counsel that is giving advice to us and not giving advice that ICANN, the corporation, would like us to get. It's a process that we hope we will be able to have somewhat in place by as close to the end of the month as possible, even by the end of this month. The firms are that are interested are interested in getting started, and we're interested in getting started with them. We've been paying attention to this issue on almost a daily basis. We are coordinating very closely with the CCWG on accountability. Many of the issues that we need to look at are similar to theirs. The competencies are similar. And getting one law firm up to speed on the peculiarities of ICANN and of the situations that we are finding ourselves in now, which are peculiar even in the history of ICANN, as we all learn much more about IANA than we ever thought we would. For those of us who weren't intimate with IANA before, certainly are now. I think we're making very good progress. We hope to have more to report, but I think right now it's we are on track to stick with our timeline and to get the advice we need. I think that as we work forward ourselves, we'll see what kind of advice we need exactly. But I don't think that the skill set that we're looking for will change.
Thanks, Greg.
I've
got a hand up in the, I've got a couple of hands up now in the room. If I can remind those participants or members to please state your name prior to speaking. So first to Aparna.
Hi, Aparna Sridhar, Business Constituency. I'm with Google. Asking the question is Google. For the client committee, it would be really helpful to understand how you've defined the client to the prospective counsel, because obviously, normally when you have one client, it's very clear, or at least it's relatively straightforward to understand what the goals of the client are, answer questions, get further exposition on sort of options, but, the client committee is sort of charged with representing a whole group of stakeholders that have different interests, different concerns, different ideas about what the best solution is or might be. And so just how have you grappled with that problem and how have you represented it to potential firms?
Thank you, Aparna. I'd say that we view the client as being this working group. The easiest way to think of it for me, at least, is it's similar to a special committee of a board of a corporation, where often a committee will ask for advice that is different from or adverse to the corporation on whose board they serve, so that the advice is separated from that of the corporation. And as with any committee, you're going to have diverse interests and disagreements, and they'll be working with the committee to advise us on the goals and that we're to look at what the problem is that we're trying to solve. And different people will be able to ask them different questions. Ultimately, the decisions are made by the client, not the lawyer, as you well know. So we'll get the advice that we can work with, and some people may challenge it. It'll be as in any working situation with advising a group of people who've come together who have of different opinions that will get peppered, I hope. Although, remember, they charge by the hour, so we don't want to pepper them too much with questions. And ICANN has, as I think has been said, but I'll say it here, is committed to funding this. It's not a blank check. We need to, as I said in an earlier session, need to spend the money like it's our own. But at the same time, we need the advice that we need to get. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you. I've got Sean next.
Okay, thank you. This is Sean Yadiji, from Nigeria and member of the CWG. I did send a few questions relating to this particular issue to the list, and I didn't get a response, so I think I'll just better read them out here. My question to you, Greg, is the selection process, where are you guys discussing it? Is it is there a public list that is archived where we could see the level of requirements, the things that you actually helped you inform what client to select, and so on and so forth? Where to follow your discussion, basically, not necessarily to contribute, but at least to follow your discussions. The second thing is, the second question is related to the first. It's important that we kind of understand where you guys are discussing all these issues, because it's the client actually is going to be presenting an output that will affect the process of this CWG, so it's important to follow through with you. I would like to know the exact timeline related to the general CWG timeline. Right now says that there will be legal client by March, but I would like to, is it February or March? I'd like to check again. But I'd like to know what is the exact timeline for you. When are you going to appoint? When are you going to get them to respond? We need to know those specific timelines so that we can follow up with you on all these things. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. So far, we've just been discussing this on emails, as you know, between as many people as needs to be. We can certainly set up a public email list. I note that the legal committee of the CCWG accountability has already, you know, put that on a separate list, and there's no reason that we shouldn't as well. At this point, we're just discussing who to hire. Once we get someone in, once we, you know, engage one firm, we're going to instruct them, and we haven't begun to instruct any firm yet. So at this point, we're just identifying capabilities and trying to get a firm hired. In terms of timeline, I've asked the firms to provide kind of written documents introducing themselves and their capabilities that that we can circulate, just so that, you know, these are firms that I'm fairly well aware of. I've been studying the field of corporate governance firms now diligently in order to come up with these names and drawing on my knowledge, but obviously everyone's knowledge is different. So we have received a couple of these documents already. We hope to receive rest in the near future. Our list is now pretty much, our short list is now long enough that I think the list is more or less ready to start shrinking down to one firm. Again, it's our general hope is to have a firm engaged by the end of February. That's indicated on our timeline for the overall CWG. I'll be, I think, over the course of the next week, since we're all traveling, you know, toward the end of this week, we'll be in kind of high gear in talking to the firms and trying to engage them. You know, it sometimes takes a few days, even after you've selected a firm, to get things like engagement letters set up and having them actually retained. Given, you know, as I discussed with Aparna, the somewhat unusual nature, but hardly unique nature of the representation, the engagement letters may take a little bit longer to draw up, so that it is clear that even though ICANN is paying the bills, ICANN is not, that they're, you know, working with us as a committee. But again, hopeful that over the course of, really it is kind of the next couple of weeks after this, toward the end of the month, that this moves on a very sharp, crisp pace to get us there.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks, Greg. I'm mindful of time, so, and if I am not mindful, Lisa will surely make me mindful. So I think it's not a bad time to move on to the CCWG on accountability, the work we are doing to coordinate together, which of course includes the legal work we were just discussing. So I'll invite the co-chairs of that group to the podium, is it? To the front desk to join us. Welcome, Thomas Rickett and Matthew Wheel. So over to you guys to give us an update on the work and, the, in particular, the elements of coordination.
Thank you very much, Jonathan and Lisa, for inviting us to give you this quick update. Many of you in this room have probably been in contact with this very presentation I will be going through. And therefore, I will highlight the parts that are most related to the CWG's work in order to foster a conversation around this and not take too much of your time rehashing topics you've been discussing or hearing already. Chris, can you go to the next slide? So a quick reminder of the CCWG. Yes, we started late, early December, which is much later than your group. And we started from the problem statement, which is on this slide, which is that the community input after the NTIA announced its intention to the transition was that ICANN's general accountability was not to a level sufficient to proceed with the transition, and so in addition to handling the transition from the IANA function perspective, there was a need to enhance ICANN's accountability, and that's what's upon our shoulders right now. So the scope is ICANN's general accountability, and it's interdependent and interrelated with your work, but with a clear distinction in scope. The work is divided into two work streams. The workstream one is our main focus because it's what must be in place or committed to before the transition happens. And so to recap this, we are on the same boat trying to make the transition happen, but with different scopes. And of course, we try and coordinate as much as possible. The next slide. Here you have the statistics. We have 5 chartering organizations. The GNSO, co-chair is Thomas. ALAC, the co-chair is Leon Felipe Sanchez, and he apologizes for not being able to participate. The GAC is a chartering organization, and the addressing supporting organization is also a chartering organization of our group. And you see the statistics here on screen about diversity. But we are the group is as big as yours in terms of number of participants in total. So it's the kind of very similar, and there's a lot of commonalities in terms of membership as well. The next slide. So the first thing we set up doing was making sure we were talking about the same things. So we discussed about definitions around a number of key questions, one of them being what does the community want ICANN to be accountable to? What is the purpose of ICANN's accountability? So you see the 4 categories here: due process, applicable compliance with applicable legislations, achieving certain levels of performance. That's certainly something that has an echo in this group, at least I would expect so, and I've seen that from the various discussions, and ensure that the decisions are for the benefit of the public and not just a particular set of stakeholders. That's a document that's currently for review with the external advisors. And it's obviously something very central to our work that we enhance ICANN's accountability towards these purposes. The next slide. We've spent a lot of time as well discussing what is accountability. So there's a number of characteristics like transparency and consultation and independence and mechanisms that can be the checks and balances, review, redress. So redress, and I'd like to emphasize this in our vocabulary, means there is a binding outcome. And I mean, those definitions are totally open to be taken on board by this group, but you, the CWG, at some point, if you feel the need to assess the specific INR accountability mechanisms that you're dealing with. We have also listed on the next slide the stakeholders, and it's a very long list. There are stakeholders that are affected by ICANN's decisions, so we must be mindful of the impact. Either they are directly affected, or they may be indirectly affected, and I think that's very important to recognize the fact that we need to take ICANN's decisions impact into account when it comes to indirectly affected parties as well. And of course, the other side of the coin, that's the next slide, are the parties that are affecting ICANN, influencing on ICANN, all of us here, but also some others who affect ICANN more indirectly through their influence on the environment, the legislation, and everything. So that's pretty standard framework, and it's just put here to make sure we have the right basis for discussion and we share the same definitions. The next slide was a very important item of work for us, the contingencies. It was stressed many times that our respective proposals, I mean the ICG proposals, so the yours, as well as ours, would be examined by the NTIA, but also the outside observers, in terms of how resilient they would be, and they would have to be stress tested. So a big item of our work is about stress test, and the contingencies were the first step towards this, which means highlighting the different threats and their consequences towards ICANN that we would need to test whether the proposed mechanisms need enable us to address them, mitigate them, or not. And we have 25 yet at this point. Happy to add any that this group might identify and we might have skipped. Grouped into five categories, the financial crisis and insolvency ones, so anything that would basically destroy ICANN by the lack of money. The failures to meet operational obligations. For instance, if the INR operational obligations were not met, so that's a contingency. Legal or legislative actions that would destabilize ICANN by way of canceling a policy or removing parts of its mission out or something. Failures of accountability internally, so anything that would be acting outside of ICANN's accountability mechanisms. For instance, a leader of the organization that would act out of any rules of due process. And failure of accountability to external stakeholders. If ICANN were to, actually, for instance, try and act outside of its mission. So those are the kind of contingencies we're looking at and we'll stress test in the end against our proposals. This is an ongoing work, and tomorrow we're going to we're actually making good progress on this aspect, and I invite everyone to come to our meeting tomorrow, 7 a.m., breakfast included. Next slide. We have spent a face-to-face meeting in Frankfurt in January defining what would be our requirements for appropriate mechanisms in Workstream 1, meaning have to be in place before the transition can happen, in place or committed to. So it's really the minimum requirements we're looking for, and this, what I will present now, is the items we are considering, and there might be some filtering yet that we can, additional filtering we do. And they group into two categories. It's basically a community that is empowered with, so which has certain powers, and an enhancement of the review and redress processes. That's the two big categories of requirements. And I just want to stop for a moment on this idea that we've started with definitions, then requirements, and then we develop solutions. This is a deliberate approach that we are taking to ensure we speak of the same things with definitions, and we have a clear terms of reference of what we're looking for before we get into the substantial and difficult discussions about the details. So it's still high level, but it's deliberate. So going back to the work party one On the next slide, you will see a number of examples of what we're considering as powers for the community, such as approval of strategic plans, opposition to a board decision or a staff decision, removing one or more board members. Those are the examples of what we are considering to empower the community with. And I'd like to, on this one, mention that changes to the bylaws, approval by the community on changes to the bylaws, is one of the items we're considering. And I know there is a relationship with some of the options that are currently on the table for this group. On work party two, on the next slide, is regarding review and redress mechanisms. And this is much of a review of the existing ones with the assumption that there needs to be something binding at some point. And so there's, of course, a lot of work being done on the how binding the process are or should be, what's the standard of review, who has standing, and what's the outcome. The affirmation of commitment is also on our radar. And of course, we are focusing on general accountability mechanisms. So there might be, we might be more focused on last resort mechanisms. And there is a connection to be found with potentially the independent appeals panel that this group is considering. And finally, the next slide is the timeline. It has been designed jointly. I mean, we've been exchanging a lot with Lisa and Jonathan. We have weekly conference calls where we try and synchronize as much as we can on this. But we are currently working with the idea that we would go for public comment on our proposals by beginning of April and submit to the ASO and ACs by end of May. But just like for your group, this is a best case scenario, obviously, and a lot of things can happen on that. That's it for the update. I was trying to be as quick as possible. And Jonathan, I think if we want to, we can go to the letter, or do you want to open the debate? It's up to you.
You know, I'm very conscious that this is a working group session. This is we need to have the as much opportunity as we can for anyone to comment, question, provide input. I think that was a very useful summary, and particularly valuable that you pointed out the overlaps. I think that as we work together and as we work hard to work together, it's possible that we will find other areas of confidence where, like you mentioned on the independent appeals panel, it's probably premature to assume that you could do that. But as our definitions sharpen up and requirements become clear and your work is undertaken, it's possible that responsibilities could transfer across between the groups. So for me, the critical thing is to continue to work to make sure our requirements are as clear as possible, so that to the extent that we either develop solutions or need to develop solutions and those solutions emerge from within your group, we can cross-correlate them. But I'd strongly encourage anyone to make any comments, provide any questions. I mean, this is a really interesting area, and as the CCWG has got up to speed and as we work together as a team of co-chairs, if you like, it's incumbent on us both for the efficiency of this process, but frankly also for the efficiency of any money we spend of ICANNs on legal advice and any other effort we put in to make sure that the groups work as effectively as possible together. Thomas, did you want to make a remark?
Yes, and while you could kindly bring up the email that we sent to you a few days back, I would like to make a few remarks on our approach, building on what Mathieu has said. Mathieu has said we established the status quo first, right? We looked at what is there, the existing accountability mechanisms, we looked at the outcome of public comment periods that have been previously conducted, we looked at definitions, right? And then we looked at requirements. So basically we did what you would do in software development. You would establish the status quo, then you would look at the requirements without looking at the implementation, right? So, and once we have clarity and unanimity on the requirements, the concrete implementation doesn't that much matter, because the requirements are superior. And we think that we need legal advice to come up with an implementation model. That's what we're currently working on. And in the absence of this legal advice, we're not talking about concrete implementation. We've done, you know, this might resemble waterfall-type programming methods. You know, we did one step after the other. What we will likely do tomorrow morning is change this to agile. You know, we need to be able not to work on things sequentially, but in parallel. We tried to do this so far with having different work groups, but now we really need to come up with sprints that individuals can work on and deliver on in a short period of time. And I'm sure that there are a couple of sprints that we can share. And we've tried to identify those areas in the communication that we had back and forth. And while we are very efficient in setting up conference calls between the co-chairs, we found that we are far too polite with each other. You know, as you will know, we have charters spelling out what the two groups are tasked to do, and these have a clear demarcation in terms of accountability, what you guys are doing and what we are supposed to do. And we've been so cautious trying to avoid stepping over the line. So you said budget transparency, and we said, well, what are your requirements for that? And then we got the feeling that you were a little bit upset with us not saying, okay, we do it for you. And we said, well, could you please say what budget positions you would like to have in the transparency? Right. So, and I think we agreed we would stop that. You just say what data fields are important for you, and we make sure that they go into the proposal as a requirement for ICANN. And what we've also done, and Bruce has been instrumental in that, Bruce had said, I'll give you the data on current costs of IN operations. It's with Xavier at the moment, and they're going to deliver in the next couple of days. Right? So we can, you know, if we're only sufficiently open with each other, we can deliver. Right? And I think that in this spirit, we should try to be working together more at all levels. Not only at the co-chair level. I know that there are a lot of folks in this room who are both on the CWG as well as the CCWG. And maybe by getting clearer views on requirements and common requirements, we can build into our process what your needs are. That's what we try to express with our high-level statements as well as with our further communication, but maybe we haven't made that sufficiently clear. And in that spirit, maybe we want to look at the communication of the letter, because these are obviously areas where we would like to get more information from you. The first area was actually the budget transparency, so I think we can tick that off the list. It's work underway. We're going to get the data from ICANN. I think your group will review that. And then once we get the data fields, or once you say, okay, this breakdown of costs, this format is okay, we make sure that it goes into the proposal. The next point would be accountability for redelegations. So we had a lot of discussions surrounding that, and yet, again, we were very cautious to take into consideration the sensitivities for CCTLD operators, not to suggest that ICANN or the ICANN board would make substantive decisions on CC matters. We won't. We don't plan to, right? And this is why we made clear that we will come up with accountability mechanisms. And only to the extent that the board or staff have a role to play in that regard, that should be subject to the accountability mechanisms that we're working on, while the question of delegation and redelegation in substance should not be in the purview of what we're doing. Is that something that is well received in this group? So I guess that we will likely come up with review and redress mechanisms also for delegations and redelegations, except for the core part where it's a matter for the sovereign states and countries to make decisions, right? So we will make sure that we don't touch that that should be dealt with somewhere else. Jonathan.
Thomas, just noting the emerging stream in the chat referring to some support for the opportunity to work closely, to potentially transfer between the groups as appropriate, and to recognize that effectively coming out of this is a form of emerging single solution, or at least integrated solution.
Thank you. Are there more comments on the accountability for delegations or redelegations question? So I would say, our take-home message for this is, you don't be afraid we step over the line. We've well understood, so should you read the word delegation or redelegation in our work, it's certainly nothing that's going to concern the substantive decisions that need to take place in countries. Right? So I think that's... And then maybe we can speak a little bit more openly than we previously did. Independent review of board actions. That's actually something that, although we haven't yet specified anything and although we haven't done a consensus call, but I think you can rely on our group delivering on processes, potentially various processes, that give the community the opportunity to have board decisions reviewed or approved. So that either certain things, such as budget approval, for example, would need to go to the community for approval by the community, and if the community is not happy with it, we send it back to the board and said, you need to redo it, right? So there will be such mechanism, which I think you can rely on. And as far as we can say now, there might be some sort of reviews or review redress mechanisms that can be triggered by the community, by an empowered community, as we call it. And then there might be others that will be subject to independent review, where no stakeholders that might be conflicted or have vesting interests in the decision can take part. So that's what sort of the topic that's, or the theme that's evolving. So we're going to have independent review of board actions, and we will also likely have an independent appeals panel. And as we build this framework, we do think that we might come up with a mechanism where your concerns could be embedded, added to the list of competencies, so it could be built into the overall architecture. Again, cognizant of the fact that substantive decisions on the CCs would not be made by the ICANN board or by the ICANN community. So that would actually need to be an independent panel, and I think it would be for you, your group specifically, to describe how such panel could be composed, what the competencies would be. But I think we have some sort of ideas on, our group also recognizes the need for independent review or an independent appeals panel.
So Thomas, in the first instance, it's Jonathan speaking. It's to your point, it's as much about the competencies of the panel. Prior to even thinking about the competencies of the panel, it's being very sure what the requirements and scope of that panel's function is. And it feels to me like, as far as the IANA function is concerned, to the extent that such a panel needs to exist, its scope is likely to be very tight.
Would you like to add to that?
Just a quick follow-up. One thing also we'll be working on is we're going to be using templates and making sure we have a checklist of what an accountability mechanism is made of. And that's certainly something we can share in a process to ensure you don't spend too much time revisiting the different items to be provided. So that's also an area for cooperation, enhanced cooperation.
Okay, so I'm very conscious of time in my mind. I've got the fact that we've got to deal with the issues about how we're going to work and structure and organize our work going forward. And in addition, that we need to create a substantial window in this meeting for any input at the mic. So happy to hear any other further discussion. It feels to me like you've given us a very good update of the work of the group. given us a good indication of further background and thinking based partly on our interchanges as to how we might develop from that letter, from the interchange of mails. It doesn't feel to me like you necessarily need a further reply back by mail. I think we're clear that what we're doing. Are there any other questions or comments on this before I close item 4 and move on? Thomas?
Yeah, just looking at the chat and seeing one remark stating that you shouldn't be losing control over what you need to do. That's no way the intention. I think what we can offer is that you build on what we are working on. So what Mathieu, for example, mentioned, we will have a standard template for developing accountability mechanisms. We would talk about the name of the accountability mechanism. You would say we would speak to standing, we would speak to accessibility, we would speak to the standards of procedure, we would speak to the composition of the decision-making body, and you know, so all aspects, so that we have a matrix for certain accountability mechanisms, one of which could be the one that you want to deploy. And if we use the same format for it, then it might be possible to easily embed that into an overall accountability architecture, yet not neglecting the fact that you have special needs and certainly you need to be in full control over the outcome.
Just speaking to that, this is really an offer for support, definitely not an offer for reviewing the respective scopes. So, I mean, the accountability of delivering the proposal is on your side. If you want us to support, ask for it, we'll consider it, and we'll look at it favorably, probably, as long as it's within our skills. But it's being working on your requirements, under your guidance, proposing, and approval is definitely within your side as well. So I just wanted to emphasize this, because I can understand the sensitivity behind this.
Okay, thank you very much. I would say that it is helpful having the efficiency of the notes on the chat and then us picking them up. That does seem to be a very useful way to do things efficiently, but it is not the only way. If someone feels the need to come up and speak at one of the microphones on the desk or at the floor, please do so. So let's draw a line under item 4. Thank you very much, Mathieu and Thomas. Look forward to continue to work with you. Next item highlights and seeks to spend some time. Really, to some extent, 5 and 6 are related. They're about what work we do in the near future and how we might work. And in talking this through with Lisa over the last few days and thinking about how we might both gain forward momentum and gain the appearance of forward momentum, because I think certainly the appearance and in some ways the reality is that we've been caught in a cycle of talking about the various models, and in particular those models don't only deal with one eventual situation, but a significant part of the thinking and effort has been around what we might do in an extreme scenario that a form of separation is required. That's fine. That work may well need to be done and should continue to be done. But we also have a complete proposal to write that potentially includes that, but doesn't only include that. So what we would certainly like to do is focus on the development of a proposal and possibly get to in the form of a proposal document and really focus on is starting to build up that document so that we can start to envisage what a finished product of this group might look like and identify all of the components of such a potentially finished product, including reference to things like the SAC69 and related documents that we heard earlier. So we've been working with various subcommittees or groups, and those groups were originally divided up, as you know, along the lines of the responses to the sections in the request for proposals from the ICG. And therefore, we called those groups RFP 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on to match the corresponding components. As you know, we completed the work of RFP 1 and 2, and really the bulk of the work that's been going on is in trying to develop the proposal for in the RFP 3 and later the related RFP 3B subgroup. We believe it may be a more efficient way to bring the group back to working significantly more as a whole group and working together as a whole group. And to the extent that tasks are done that need to contribute into the whole group, to spin those off into task forces that report back to the group on a weekly basis. And so, in effect, do what maybe what Thomas was calling, was making the analogy of sprints in the agile process, but essentially creating areas to focus on key deliverables that will feed into an overall document which will give us a map of what we're trying to achieve. And those include things like the SLAs, maybe detail on the CSC, possibly the IAP, and going through that in a requirements, solution, iterate, and keep coming back until we have a module that we can plug into the main document. And of course, the issues in and around the particularly intractable area which will require legal advice can be one such area of work. So we've had the coordinators of these RFP groups doing quite substantial work running separate calls, and those coordinators will still be responsible for overseeing the production of those areas of the document, but it feels to us like integrating the group and working more significantly as a committee of the whole and continually checking the work of those task forces may be a more effective way of working. I think we'll continue to rely on a single document author so the document doesn't get splintered. And personally, I'd like to utilize the fact that there are existing and corresponding proposals, which may necessarily be simpler. We've certainly compared them in terms of potential volume compared to ours as they stand, but there's the numbers and protocols parameters that are clearly protocol parameter proposals that have been submitted to the ICG already, and it strikes me that cross-referencing against those is also a very sensible thing to do. One, because it might guide our thinking as we develop our own document, and two, it necessarily correlates what we're doing to the extent that that's appropriate without and makes an iterative check on that, such that we don't submit it to the ICG and find that there are missing links or missing points. And having heard that one of the key concerns from the ICG about their timescale was to the extent that they had to refer anything back or go through some kind of question and referral cycle, we can perhaps head that off earlier on. So with this kind of thinking, we hope that we can at least still continue to match our best timetable, and I'm not going to say any more about timetable because that'll emerge as we begin to work. But certainly the other benefit of that is that if we have a document that we're working to with modules, we can either lock down those modules or at least get them to a substantially finished state and or put them in place in the framework that is the final document, which will serve the purpose of demonstrating incremental progress as well. So let's have some discussion around that. I think I'll bring in six so we discuss five and six together, because six is really a bucket to throw into to the extent that we aren't already working on things. It's an opportunity to put that into a bucket and say, look, these need to be developed, and in fact probably a task force needs to work on anything that's in the bucket that's defined by the gap analysis. So as we check against the existing proposals, as we check against SAC69, as we make any other analysis, we'll be able to continually say, right, well, that's missing from our proposal, that's missing from our proposal, and either we're working on it or we can put it in a holding bay ready to pick up and work on as we build the document. So let me stop there and see if there are any comments, questions, input. And I see Marika's hand is up. So let's hear from Marika and then take it from there.
Yes, this is Marika speaking on behalf of James Gannon, who is a participant in the CWG. Can we really move to that more granular sprint-style approach when the higher-level internal versus external debate has yet to be resolved, or are we going to work on both concurrently?
Well, there's some other hands up. So are you unable to put your hand up in the Adobe room? It's just easier for the purposes of queue management. So if you can possibly do that, that would be great. So the question is on this, whether or not we can do that while some items... Well, it seems to me that we should work concurrently and we should make every effort to resolve that internal-external debate. But in essence, that's a particular question about a particular problem. And in fact, currently... There is a limit to the extent that we can make progress on that until we get further down the legal advice track. So I'm in no way suggesting that we ignore or dump that particular problem, but I think it's something we can work on in parallel with other critical areas that we have to develop as part of our overall proposal. Lisa, and then we'll go.
I saw... A chat from Paul Kane about the CCS and GTLDs getting together to formulate an SLA. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks. And then we have a queue which commences with Matthew. So go ahead, Matthew.
Matthew Vey, CCNSO co-chair. Oh, CCWG co-chair. Getting lost. I'm just a bit in advance anyway. Just answering the question that was raised, the remote question, we can definitely not support and provide any help to anything that does not have clear requirements. We need to have requirements up front. But I think it's up to you to decide whether the high-level structure is necessary to actually start working on potential mechanisms, or whether you want to start with requirements coming from operational necessities and contingencies, and then leave the question of high-level structure in the end. And I think that's typically a choice for the CWG in terms of working method and way forward, but in terms of the support that the CWG can provide, it needs requirements, but it can be totally independent from high-level structure and organization. Thank you.
So a brief response to that. It seems to me that there are both requirements are need to be spelled out regardless. And I think, in a sense, we can take that leaf out of your book. Not only will it help us work better, it'll help us to the extent that we need to transfer anything to you. In addition, there is nothing to stop us doing, for example, the work that's proposed on SLAs that doesn't undermine the development of requirements and the development of ultimately proposals for solution like internal-external model. These two can work entirely in parallel. I'm very confident that we can do that. So we shouldn't in any way feel that one is supplanting the other. It's good to have some hands up in the queue. So that was yourself, Matthew. We've had you. Let's go to Robert.
This is Robert Guerra. I'm with the ESSAC and a member of the CWG. Some of the points have been mentioned. I just would like to be in support. This is Robert Guerra, member of the CWG, and I'd like to express my support for the proposed work method that I see as an agile approach to spin and create small, very focused subgroups that can develop text. And something that's not been mentioned is that, you know, we do have a target deadline that we want to try to develop text, and there's a lot that still needs to be done, and there's a lot that has been done. And so ways that we can do that, I would be quite supportive of that. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert. I'm not sure what the agile term is. We've been calling them task forces. I think it's scrums, but in any event, it doesn't matter. They're no longer subgroups, but certainly areas of intense activity. And appreciate your support for that. Paul Kane.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to say well done to the various groups that have already been reporting on sections 1 and 2. I think they have put a lot of time into the process. I would like to echo and support the idea of having specific task force groups. And it is great to see, speaking as a CC registry manager, and I'm sure some of my CC colleagues would be very willing to devise a service level expectation for the IANA, and it's good to see the GTLD community, Donna and Keith, also welcoming that. So I think that is certainly one small group that could work on substantive issues relatively efficiently and then report back to the main group.
Thank you, Paul. Milton.
Yes, I think this is Milton Mueller for the record. I agree with Mr. Gannon's first comment that I don't want us to get distracted. I think the thing, as a member of the ICG, what concerns us with respect to the timeline is when we're going to get a consensus proposal from the CWG. And the thing that is slowing you down is not perceived as small ancillary work group items. It is, you know, the fundamental model that you're going to be, is going to prove to be acceptable. So I would have no opposition, you know, to creating work groups that can do things while we're waiting for the legal advice, but I would also like to explore and be thinking about options for resolving some of the debates and discussions we've been having about internal versus external. I don't see those as unresolvable or impossible to reconcile. I see those as things we need to discuss a little more rationally and in a less polarized fashion. So let's not overlook that.
Milton, I couldn't agree with you more. And to that extent, in one sense, that can be task force oriented, and that work can continue. And to the extent that there's some form of convergence of thinking there, of course, in principle, that could reduce our requirement for legal advice. Because at the moment, we've potentially got four things we're asking. I'm not sure about that, but it's possible that it could reduce the amount of advice we need if we converge ahead of taking the advice. I mean, and that's where we've talked about, you know, consultation with the lawyers, bringing it back to the group and or the task force working on that. And as those two go in their cycle, we could end up with a more efficient outcome there as well. Eduardo.
Thank you, Jonathan. This is Eduardo for the record. I have never participated or have experience working in an agile environment, so I'm not sure how something like that is managed, especially, you know, across time zones and, you know, all kinds of people with different, I mean, we're all volunteers, and I would like to know if you have a notion or expand a little bit about how something like that will be administered or managed within this group. Thank you.
I wonder how much we should, I mean, I think the principle is agile. I don't think we're going to necessarily apply religiously agile software development methods to the way of working of the group. I think what it means to me is the group meets regularly, probably once a week. Task forces can meet as regularly as they need to using similar remote participation tools and work on solving smaller component problems and keep bringing those back to the group. They might take 1 week and say, look, we think we've solved it. Is the group okay? Yes, plug it into the thing. We're struggling. This is where we are. We're taking a while. It might take multiple of those cycles, keep coming back to the group, but at least we know in the background there's work going on, but that the group doesn't lose sight of it either and keeps. So that's the thinking, really. You want to come back on that, Eduardo?
Yes, a follow-up to that is I thought that's what we're doing now with our RFP 3B and this and that. People were working on those little things and then coming back to the main group and bringing the input from that. So I don't see a difference there.
I think in some ways you're right. There isn't. It's not fundamentally different, but it's breaking it down into smaller chunks. We've ended up with all of the group's energy being sucked into that what is a fundamental issue, but nevertheless, it gives the appearance of the group not making progress when we could be making progress on a number of other items. So breaking it down into smaller parcels of work and notching up successes with that, I think will be good both for the productivity and probably the psychology of the group and those that are watching us. Thank you. All right, Greg's hand is up, and then I'm mindful that it's 6:43. We'll go to 15:15, don't we? I've been working towards the top of the hour. I must say I've been driving myself and you probably a little harder than necessary, thinking we had a top of the hour stop time. So, Greg, go ahead.
I just wanted to add to your response to Eduardo, and I think that 3B is kind of a transitional object, if you will, between the big lump approach that we were taking in the beginning, since RFP 3 was basically answering the entire question of how do we do this, and 3B was kind of a first step in breaking off a small piece of how do we do this and looking at it, and now we've gone completely to that methodology while keeping the central throughway of our work, breaking off a number of smaller pieces and doing it in that way. So I would say that 3B is very similar to the work style that we're adopting and the previous style of saying that RFP 3 will solve all problems and that RFP 4 will tell us whether we've solved all problems. It was a little bit too non-granular. So that's where we're at.
Thanks, Greg. And to the extent that you talk about the main group being the throughway, I feel that the spine of that throughway is the emerging document.
You've mixed your metaphors, but thank you.
I understand.
And Jonathan, I'd like to add, I think we should have like 30 minutes for the open mic, so we're in a good place and could go on.
Okay, I don't see further hands up, so now let's switch to the open mic, meaning that anyone of the members, participants, or anyone else is able to contribute at this stage. Grace? Marika, go ahead.
Yes, this is Marika. I have three questions in the queue from remote observers. Would you like me to read all three of them or one by one?
One at a time, please.
So the first question is from Mike Oscar. Would the legal advice be coming from a firm which has expertise in U.S. California corporate governance law? Not sure whether it is within the scope of the CWG names. Will the legal advice would also cater to issues regarding jurisdiction?
I think we've covered much of that, but let me hand over to Greg to see.
Greg Shatton, for the record. I would quickly say yes. One of the core competencies, indeed the core competency, is not only corporate governance law, but specifically U.S. and California corporate governance. To the extent that any jurisdiction issues are raised, I'm sure that whatever firm we hire will be competent to look at those issues as well. Thank you.
Next, Marika.
Jonathan, just if I could follow up on Greg. This is Chuck Gomes.
Please do.
Some people in this room may not be aware that a detailed scoping document was prepared and with regard to this that included the requirement, for example, of California nonprofit law expertise. So calling attention to that might help some people that aren't aware of that.
Yeah, that's a welcome reminder. Thank you, Chuck, that document, there is a scope and briefing document that we worked hard on and covers the initial briefing. We were careful to recommend to the group that wasn't the final word. It was a starting point for the legal advice, but nevertheless covered some of those key principles and necessary requirements of the work of the group. So thank you, Chuck, for that reminder. Marika, next question, please.
Yes, this is Marika speaking on behalf of Oscar Mike. Developing accountability mechanisms architecture would also depend on the nature of the legal entity/institution it is intended for. How is the CCWG planning to address this contingency?
I'm not sure I properly understand the question, Marika. probably more for the CCWG, I think. Is that right? Or, yeah, it looks like it's more for the CCWG. I've had another question asking whether we skipped over the gap analysis. What I said when I introduced item 5 was I would talk about item 5 and 6, and that the way forward was that work method we've talked about and that many of you have responded to in the chat, and that the gap analysis is really about, if you remember, I referred to a container that would be a basis on which we would create the initial, the starting point of any task forces. So you've got your issue, your requirements, your task force, and then feeding in. So in a sense, the gap, and we created that, the items in that gap analysis by looking against existing proposals that have already been submitted to the ICG, SAC 69, existing, any other input into the group. So it's a kind of catch-all to say, we know we're working on all of this, we can see in the document, but what's missing is A, B, C, D, and that and that's an ongoing process. Right, I've got, Marika, I know you've got one more question, but I'm going to go to, I've got Siva and Russ in the queue, so if you could come back into the queue, Marika, with that final question. So Siva, let me go to you.
Yeah, this is Siva Subramanian. There are various proposals by both the working groups, and I have a feeling that some participants are more attached to proposals to create new entities, and there's not much of attention paid to simpler solutions that are internal. What I want to request all the both the groups is to be a little more receptive to ideas of simple solutions, internal solutions, and others. No one has placed a magic formula on the table, but if we are receptive to the idea of a simpler solution, a truly simpler solution that does not hurt anyone could emerge. Thank you.
So I will say personally, I'm truly receptive, and I'm sure everyone in the group is to this, the simplest solution. But I'm sure others might remark on whether they indeed feel, you know, what the definition of simplicity is. But nevertheless, I agree with you, and I've heard that sentiment throughout these last few days, that the group, so I think we should have that ringing in our ears as we do our work. We should be testing any thinking. Is this as simple as we can make it? I do agree with that sentiment. So if anyone else wants to respond separately to that, by all means do. In the meantime, let me go to Russ.
Thank you, Jonathan. I wanted to comment this time purely as an individual, last time up there as an ESSAC person. And although I do believe the ESSAC documents are very important and the group should look at, study, and take those very much into consideration, there was another very, very important document, I believe, that was published shortly after ESSAC 69. And that was the set of briefing slides that NTIA themselves published that said, this is what we do in the root zone management. And as being an individual who has actually read the entire 400 plus pages of the contract, I can very specifically say this document from NTIA is probably the best summary of what NTIA believes they do, and having been around this, the community for quite a while and engaged in it, I think it's very accurate.
Thank you, Russ. Two quick comments. One, thank you. That's very useful to remind us and or let those of us who didn't know that existed. And I think we should take an action to go back and look at that and review that relative to our gap analysis. Second, I'll remind all of us that one of the very first tasks we did was went through a thorough review of the contract ourselves and took a did a triage of that document and looked for it. Although I have had some conversations that have reminded me that we need to, that whilst that is a, and I don't know anything about that NTIA slide, so I'm not making comment, really my comment is with reference to the contract itself, that to some extent we need to think, our job is not necessarily to replace that contract like for like. but rather to have an independence of thought that says, how should this be done going forward? So it's a great reference point, the contract as we had originally, those slides very helpful, but also we need to have our own independence of thought. So thank you, Russ.
Jonathan, if I could just interject in a direct response to Russ. We did review that slide deck in the last conference call of RFP3. It was posted to the list. So we have, you know, gone through it at least once, and we'll do so again. But it is not only on our radar screen, but we've worked on it.
Okay, thanks for that reminder. I wasn't on that call, but that's useful. Nevertheless, I do think, you know, with the current thinking in mind, reviewing it with opportunity to input into the gap analysis will be helpful. So that's great. Marika, we'll go to you now.
Yes, this is Marika. I still have two questions from remote observers. The first one is from Fan Yi. The question is, to piggyback on comments made by Phil Corwin in an earlier GNSO meeting, will the scope of accountability of ICANN include putting binding and enforceable policies in place to stop any sovereign countries from blocking contents on the website at will for political reasons?
Anyone want to answer that? Any responses? Mathieu?
So for the CCWG, it's quite early to say, but what I can say is this is definitely part of the contingencies where we'll be stress testing our proposed solutions against.
Thank you, Mathieu. That's a helpful answer. Mary, you're next. Mary Oduma.
Mary Duma for the records. I just want to ask whether in the gap analysis, whether we'll be able to reach out to the other operating communities that had submitted their proposal. Probably we'll look at some of the things they've said in the proposal, whether it could help the task forces in developing the CWG proposal. Thank you.
Yeah, Mary, that's a helpful suggestion as well. I had taken it in thinking about the gap analysis that we would read proposals from other communities and analyze them for gaps. But indeed, we would welcome any input from anyone else from those other communities to ensure that any gaps in our work were identified. And as I said at the outset, there's two motivations for that. One, for the independent completeness of our own work, but two, for the coherence potentially of our work with those other groups to make the ICG's work less difficult in the end. Thank you, Mary. That's helpful. Milton, we go to you next.
Just a brief comment about these fairly granular descriptions of what the NTIA does or doesn't do. I think what you can easily get lost in considering that is that the NTIA writes the contract. Okay, did they say that they do that, Russ, in the list? And the NTIA awards the contract. Those are the two most fundamental things, and they're not in that list. And that's really about 80% of the problem that we're faced with, the awarding and what's in the contract.
Thank you, Milton. Marika?
So this is Marika again, speaking on behalf of ISOC Gambia chapter. Their question is, if this organization's main aim is to globalize internet accessibility, what are their action plans for places with poor internet facility or connection?
I'm not sure that's certainly not in the scope of this particular group, and I might question whether that's in the scope of this organization, if this organization refers to ICANN. I'm not even sure that's in scope for ICANN, but maybe someone else might care to comment. Thomas?
In the framework of our work,
we have as one of the community empowerment requirements that the community would need to adopt a strategic plan. So as far as ICANN's mission is concerned, that strategic plan would likely speak to the issue of global inclusiveness, but that would certainly not mean that dark fiber is dug into the ground, right? But to the extent it's within Global's mission, we think this will go into the accountability work through the strategic plan.
Thank you. So, Thomas, when you refer to your group, obviously it's the CCWG, and the inclusiveness refers to the inclusiveness of participation in ICANN's work to the extent that it is within ICANN's remit. Thank you. Any other comments, questions, input, challenges? It's the end of a long day, certainly is for me. Robert.
This is Robert Gehr again. One thing I also want to mention as well, what's different about this meeting of the CWG is that there's an excellent, there are a number of people with, the folks from NTIA I know are in the room, and the folks from IANA, Kim and others are here as well too. And so if additional clarifications or questions are required, this is a rare opportunity that we can engage with them. That's normally not the case, and I would really maybe ask folks to be able to speak with them. It's a resource that we usually don't have. And going to Russ's point as well, too, I would like to propose to, also like to mention that IANA had an excellent presentation this morning on the different things that they do, and suggest that if there is... because there are these great briefings that both NTIA and IANA have done, I might suggest that in the next coming weeks, perhaps we have a short webinar where they could present maybe a summarized version of the presentation that they give today. It would just help refocus us and know what's done, and so we can perhaps ask some focused questions, which we've not been able to do at this session with them. Thank you.
Yeah, I think, did you send any link to that today already? You did, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of required reading for the group, and maybe one thing we could do, Grace, is capture an action items list to develop and maintain a required reading list so that we can keep that in continuous circulation and remind one another of what the level of expertise is required in terms of this form of background reading to continue to contribute most effectively to the work of this group. I see support for that in the chat, so I think that's a key item. All right, let's draw this open microphone session to a close and then turn to a review of the action items coming out of the meeting, for which I will turn to Grace, who I hope has been keeping an accurate record of such items.
Thank you, Jonathan. This is Grace Abu Hamid for the record. So on the list of action items, I have combined two. So we had a list to review the SAC documents, the existing proposals submitted to the ICG, and the NTIA slides. I've combined that with the latest action item, which is to develop and maintain a required reading list. Would that be okay to combine the two action items?
No, they're different
or
objectives.
They're just separate?
Well, okay. The first is to, they should certainly be added. All of those three reports should be added to the required reading list. But in addition, we'll want a task force or one or more individuals to review those documents for inputs into the gap analysis, to make sure that the work of our group is properly scoped. That's the funnel. The gap analysis produces the funnel for the work of the group.
Understood. Okay. So there'd be one task force potentially to review the documents that I'd mentioned.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's a task force as such. It's probably one or two individuals to review that. But nevertheless, that's the requirement to review the documents for input.
Okay. The second action item I had was to, which is what the first action item has turned into, to review the documents and pull out elements for the CWG. The third action item would be to reach out to the other communities. This was suggested by Mary Uduma, to reach out to the other communities, the protocol parameters and the numbering community, to see if they had anything to add to the gap analysis. And the last action item would be to develop the required reading list. One additional item that came up in the chat was potentially to start a list on the mailing list to determine or get a suggestion of task forces. So would suggest that we do that through an email thread.
Yeah, so ideally the titles and direction of those task forces comes out through either the gap analysis, but there's no reason why we shouldn't start a mailing list that says we clearly have at least one already, which is the SLAs, and that looks like that's sort of emerged during the course of this meeting. I'm sure there are others that escape me right now, but yes, that's a good idea too. And then, of course, in the first step in each of that is the requirements, and then to start to build out the solution on the back of the requirements. Any other actions that have been missed that came out through the course of the discussion? Lisa?
Well, we had a request from Sean about having more transparency regarding the legal committee or the client committee, and I think we need a way to have a list or whatever we're going to make with this, but just in order. And I heard Greg was agreeing on this. So.
Okay, well, we'll make best efforts to do that. As you know, the idea was to make an effective interface between both the procurement and management of the legal function. But if it feels like more transparency is required and we can do that effectively, then we'll work with you to do that. All right. Thank you very much for all of your contributions, both members and participants, as well as others who've joined us in the room today. I hope we have an effective way forward. Siva, I was about to wrap, and I see your hand is up, so it looks like you might get the last word.
Just that there are documents like SAC 67, 68, 69, and then the document that runs into 400 pages, and there are some complicated documents that some of the participants read, but not everyone reads. So if we can have the participants who read the document summarize it in the form of a simple presentation for everyone to understand, it'll help the work of the working group.
Did I see your hand up going up as a volunteer? All right. Well, that's a reasonable suggestion, and I'm sure. I mean, to some extent, SAC 69 is summarized in the executive summary, for example. So hopefully, in some cases, they already contain a summary. But excuse me. Thank you for that suggestion. All right. Thank you, everyone, for your participation and involvement. Look forward to working with you in the weeks to come.